Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. Happy Scary Movie Month. My name is Patrick Brownlee, and I am joined today for a discussion of the best and worst vampire movies by everybody's favorite sucker, JB.
Listen to them, children of the night. What music they make.
I like it. That was good. You can find our website at fthismovie.net. We got Scary Movie Month going on, so you should check it out. Follow us on Twitter. We're at fthismovie. Like us on Facebook or email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Remember that we have the Scary Movie Challenge going on right now.
Very fun.
Which we do every October. This is our fourth annual Scary Movie Challenge, where you watch a scary movie anytime in October. You post a 7-word review of it. You can find the tab for Scary Movie Challenge at the top of our homepage at fthismovie.net. The first year that we did it, our goal was to get to 100 7-word reviews, because I think our site had only been around a couple months at that point. And I think this year we were at 100 by the end of day 2.
Easily, because now if you go there, you follow it all the way down to the bottom, and then you have to hit more posts, and then it loads some more.
Right.
So in theory, we're on the second page,
right,
although it's not paginated.
Last year we cracked 1,000. I'm fairly confident that we'll beat it this year.
And before I forget, if you hear munch, 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 crunch, to keep in the spirit of the thing, I'll be eating Count Chocula cereal throughout the podcast. And because I'm tremendously superstitious, and we are going to be talking about vampires, I have brought along some holy water, and I would like to take this opportunity to, if you wouldn't mind.
No, that's fine. Go ahead.
Ooh, Domine Patria. Ah. Domine Spiritus Sancte, Clectu Barada Nosferata, E Pluribus Dracula, whose name is so terrible, who is the drinker of all our blood, the Domine Patria, Domine Spiritus Sancte, Amen. Right. I just threw holy water
on... He really did flick water on
Patrick
me,
Patrick Bromlin.
That was theater,
flick.
Theater of the mind.
There's a verb you don't hear very much
that's
anymore.
That's what the priest does, right? He's the guy responsible for flicking the holy water.
I don't think in the catechism they call it flicking. I think they probably have a fancy word for it.
Do you want to do the Scary Movie Challenge entries first before we do...
yeah.
What have you seen lately?
Let's do Scary Movie Challenge entries.
So the deal is that when you guys write your 7-word reviews at fthismovie.net for the Scary Movie Challenge, we pick some of our favorites and we read them on the show, and we do it all month long.
And I got to say, the bar has been raised because people have been posting very, very good reviews. So I want to take this opportunity to say all of these made me laugh. And in some cases, these are also very loyal listeners and readers,
yes,
and they comment, and very often I really like the things that they comment. Tom Bartman on September 30th. Wait a minute. Oh, it's okay. It was past midnight. posted a review of The Fly. Look, I'll deal with getting carsick.
I have one from Tom Bartman also for Child's Play 2. So PlayPals only makes Chucky dolls?
That one made me laugh too. Sam Martinez on the first day, the first full day of the Scary Movie Challenge. posted the following 7-word review of Reanimator. Includes greatest cock block moment of all time. If you've seen the movie, Sam, that review is epic.
This one, not as funny as it is true, from Danny, D-A-N-I, writes of Psycho. A masterpiece. It's all downhill from here.
Very true. Although, for Scary Movie Month, I watched Psycho 2 for the first time in...
It's great.
A long time.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. I've been beating the drum on that movie for a long time, and now Scream Factory put it out on Blu-ray, and all of a sudden people are revisiting it and saying, oh, that's pretty good.
And did it get hammered when it came out?
Yeah.
It could satisfy no one. The people who were there for gore, there wasn't enough gore, even though there is quite a bit of gore.
Yeah.
The people who came for suspense, for some reason, they didn't like the suspense, even though there is suspense.
Yeah.
You got your Dennis Franz. It's horrible. And again, that moment at the end, I shall not spoil it. Even though he now writes for the site, I think we have to give a shout out to Heath Holland, who on the first official day of the Scary Movie Challenge posted the following 7-word review of An American Werewolf in London. And I agree with him wholeheartedly. Quote, oddly comforting, like a warm werewolf blanket.
I need a werewolf blanket.
I think all, as opposed to a werewolf bar mitzvah.
That's right.
I think all of us have seen that movie so many times.
Yeah.
Although, tangent, the Alamo Drafthouse often commissions original posters for their screenings. And the Mondo Gallery down in Austin has made this, sort of made a cottage industry out of selling limited editions of them. They just released the latest batch, the one for American Werewolf.
Yeah.
is an iconic image from your favorite scene. I almost bought it for you, but it's way too expensive.
No, don't.
Okay, but you know the scene I'm talking about.
I don't know if I do.
The subway.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. I mean, that is your favorite scene.
Yeah.
You said that.
Yes.
And again, most of the time, those artists, they have to sort of pick the perfect moment from the film.
Right.
And a lot of them are able to.
I bet I could actually guess the shot, but maybe I'm wrong. We'll look at it afterwards.
Okay. I actually think it might be something that's not in the film.
Oh, okay.
But
okay. Got it.
An extrapolation.
Tom Maloney says of Dead Silence, Donnie Wahlberg ain't too fond of dummies. Have you not seen Dead Silence?
No, I haven't.
It's about ventriloquist dolls. And Donnie Wahlberg is in it.
Okay. I was thinking in another weird way that review could apply to The Happening.
That would be Mark Wahlberg, though.
I know.
Oh, got it.
Because I think this gentleman is so damn clever, and I want to give him mad shout-outs. Mr. Eric Aspersluger.
Yes.
Here are my two favorites from him so far, from October 1st and October 2nd. The Burning. Killing Woodstock by Cropsky Kills, by Cropsy Kills and Slash. I thought that was so clever. And finally, and man, I hold this one close to my heart. Every year on Halloween, I show it to all my classes. It's the official Halloween activity. Trilogy of Terror, but only the final third. Eric's review of Trilogy of Terror, use only genuine Zuni chain replacement parts.
Gray Weirdo says, Embrace of the Vampire, only watched this for Doug's favorite scenes.
Yes. Embrace of the Vampire will be discussed later in this podcast as well. Shannon Briggs reviewed Kiss of the Damned, which I saw a couple weeks ago at the Music Box and was really impressed by, and I think he nailed it. And I don't think he's being funny. He's trying to nail the unusual tone of this film. Ty West and Jean Rollin get married.
I watched it on Netflix. I didn't love it, but it was different.
I thought it was an interesting approximation if Jess Franco had gotten a commission from Cinemax.
Right. Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, it was something kind of different.
You will say this. It doesn't run out of steam halfway through, I thought. But only perhaps...
I think it sags in the middle.
That because the pace is so...
Yeah.
Deliberate and slow, maybe you can't really apply that.
Matt Sollenberger says, Room 237, this movie presents insane ramblings as facts.
And can we say that the official F this movie position, on? Can we say that we're unanimous?
I haven't watched it yet. It's on Netflix Instant now. I've started it twice and bailed both times.
Okay, I think.
But both times it was more so because I wasn't able to give it the attention that it deserved.
Mute testimony. I think it's going to be F this movie's official stance that film is just the worst. Kathy posted also on October 1st for The Burning, Kingsford Summer Camp Janitors, edges light quickly.
Mike Young says of The Lords of Salem, they're naked, they have always been naked. Which, if you guys didn't see, that was our Scary Movie Month movie club entry this past weekend. Lots of great conversation about that movie. Next week, it's The Haunting, so make sure you watch The Haunting so you can take part.
But when does it come out on Blu-ray?
I don't know, but just watch it anyway.
Okay.
It's on DVD. Well, I don't know. I thought Tuesday, because I thought I figured it out, but I could be wrong.
It's on DVD. Oh, because it's next Saturday. Mm-hmm. We're probably fine. It's on DVD, but the DVD is in Los Angeles, because anticipating the Blu-ray, I let my son have the DVD.
Oh, whoops.
Uh-oh. Speaking of Lords of Salem.
Just watch the remake.
No. Speaking of Lords of Salem, yeah. Sal O writes, Satanic witch music sounds better on vinyl.
Well, I like vinyl. And the last one I have is from Ed Perry, who's watched a ton of Universal horror.
Yes, I have a note here for Ed Perry.
Okay.
Slow down. You're making us all look bad, man.
Dracula 31, Swan Lake has never sounded so scary.
And you had commented maybe years ago that when that movie starts and Swan Lake starts to play, it's like...
It was...
it's like a warm werewolf blanket.
It was the Svengoolie movie last night, and we came home, we saw Gravity, and we came home... And it was on TV because my 4-year-old son was watching it. And It was a bad old print that's been beat up, but there's something that's so comforting about the hiss in that movie. It's the best.
The first time they took out the hiss, people on the Classic Horror Film Board were, like, complaining, but that's the original hiss.
I love the hiss.
Gray Weirdo, whose comments I love, reviewed Hellraiser in the following fashion. Pinhead, the definition of tough but fair. And he wrote about Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, and let me tell you, Gray Weirdo, this made me laugh out loud. The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, has Tim Burton seen any other movie? And finally, our patriarch is too humble to quote himself, but so far my favorite review of all 247 is from this guy named Patrick Bromley on October 3rd. Don't go in the woods. Quote, don't watch Don't Go in the Woods.
Have you ever seen Don't Go in the Woods?
No.
It's one of the worst things ever.
I shouldn't do this because, again, as you've said innumerable times, it's better to watch something than not watch something.
Yes.
But sometimes something will come up and I'll just say, life is too short.
Yeah,
man.
No, you're right. You're right.
Life is too short.
You're right.
Also, before we leave this, who's the dick who reviewed Wizard of Oz? Come on. I bet that's the kind of guy who would go to an IMAX screening on opening night and try to save seven seats.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
I'll bet. It wasn't opening night, by the way. It was the second night.
They wouldn't have known that.
All right, so keep posting.
More
holy water.
Shit.
Keep posting in the Scary Movie Challenge. Let's get to like 1,500, 2,000. Let's keep going.
I think we're on track.
Yeah.
Because it slows down in the middle, and then at the end, people go nuts.
Yeah.
I believe this year we'll get 1,500.
All right. I like it.
What did we get last year?
Just over 1,000. 1,000 and some change.
And I still remember.
Yes.
I, like, looked at the clock, and we weren't at 1,000.
Yes.
I might be misremembering this, or the website might not be accurate, but I had just enough time to watch one of these cheapy films. It's like 62 minutes long.
Yeah.
And I believe I was the 1,000th review.
It's very possible.
Like 2 minutes to midnight.
Nice. Nice.
It was the highlight of my year.
Well, let's not take it that close to the wire this year, folks. It makes me nervous.
I think we'll get 1,500.
All right, cool. I like it. Jay Bones, have you seen anything scary lately?
I also attended the Creature from the Black Lagoon 3D screening that Adam so succinctly wrote about this week. And he went in the afternoon, and I went in the evening, which was a problem because I thought he was going to be at the evening screening so that I might have a ride home. No problem. It was my miscommunication. Everything that Adam was said is right. I don't need to say anything else. We're looking forward to the massacre. Also, very recently, I saw Gravity with you, sir.
Yes.
And I was wondering what you thought of it.
Well, that's not a scary movie. We can only talk about scary movies.
Really?
Yeah. That's all we talk about in
then
October.
What we saw lately, we've reviewed in seven words.
Yeah. But
so
I just thought we would
on.
Expound upon it a little bit. If you had more than seven words to say about a movie.
I recently reviewed.
I thought Gravity was great.
I thought it was very good.
Yeah.
Not great.
Okay. But that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has problems. Definitely.
It was very entertaining.
Yes.
It was almost, what's the adjective I'm looking for? It was refreshing to see a film focus on such a little story and know that if you make that compelling enough, you don't need to pile on the nonsense.
Right.
That, I thought, on the way home, Jan and I were saying that it was very much like a Twilight Zone episode, which is why I kept thinking there was going to be one final twist at the end.
Right. It deserves to be seen in a theater, though, so if you guys are around, especially, and I do not like 3D, I've talked a lot about how I don't like 3D, but
there are reasons to see this in 3D.
See it on the biggest screen you can find
that are
in 3D.
Intrinsic to the film itself.
This
it's not
a movie
just
that you should wait for Netflix.
Right, and I was glad that we paid the upcharge for IMAX 3D.
Have you seen anything scary lately that you want to talk about?
Well, I said I had been revisiting some old favorites, and of course, there's all these great movies. Thank God that they see October as a marketing opportunity. Patrick mentioned that Scream Factory is putting a different release on sale every day, so check that out. I watched Psycho 2 for the first time in maybe 20 years.
Yeah,
and that movie is just terrific and just entertained the crap out of us. And The Fly finally came out on Blu-ray. to a chorus of, why don't you release that cool box set that you released on DVD? It's like, well, no, they're releasing, just, you don't have to buy it.
Right, right.
But the Blu-ray looks great, and again, I think so much of this, because you had reviewed Halloween 4 this
yes.
week.
Yes.
And you said something very profound, that it has a lot to do with your first experience with the film, because as you've said on more than one occasion, Halloween you can respect, but there's an aspect to it that leaves you cold.
Yes.
And I was a sophomore in high school and saw Halloween the Friday it opened, and I will never forget the way that audience reacted to that film. It's like part of the experience for me. So I'm revisiting all these older horror films on Blu-ray now and enjoying it so much. The first time I saw The Fly was on the 3:30 movie, which I've talked about ad nauseum. And I think at the age I was, that thing at the end with the head in the spider web was the scariest thing I had ever seen in my life.
I think you wrote about that in a column.
I'm convinced I'm not alone. I mean, there's certain things.
Sure.
There's certain movie moments that people remember. Just the things I've been reviewing for Scary Movie Challenge.
I rewatched The Stuff, which I hadn't seen in a long time. Sorry. I like Larry Cohen.
I like Larry Cohen, too, and Rusty showed that maybe a year or two ago.
Yes.
And
sci-fi thing, I think.
I couldn't believe it was the same movie I saw. I had not seen it since it came out. Yeah. I still remember the Inside Woodfield Theaters.
Yes.
That's where I saw it the night before it left. And really liked it.
Yes.
And when I watched it again, I don't know, about a year ago at the patio, it's not very good.
Not really, no.
I don't know what I was responding to. I think I was in my late teens, early 20s.
It has a pretty good reputation among sort of horror fans.
It's got a hell of a premise.
Yes.
But
but doesn't really know what to do with it. And I think my 7-word review, I don't even know if I wrote my 7-word
not
review
yet.
It works better. It tries to do sort of satire, and it works better, I think, in that respect than it does as a horror movie. When Paul Sorvino shows up at the end, he's pretty funny.
And there's so much of that corporate, the government and the corporate thing is this, like, that the corporation is like the KGB and they're trying to keep it secret.
Right.
There's way too much of that, and there's not enough of the stuff.
Right.
I mean, that's...
Right. You should watch Chuck Russell's remake of The Blob instead. I saw The Mangler for the first time, which is a Tobe Hooper movie I had never seen. And
based on a Stephen King short story.
Yes. And that, I believe, was his last theatrical film. And in recent years, I've come to really like Tobe Hooper because I realize he's made all these movies that I really, really love. The Mangler is not one of them. And then two more I'll talk about real quick. She-Wolf of London, which I had never seen. It was the only film on that Universal Wolfman Legacy collection that I hadn't seen before. And spoilers for She-Wolf of London. There's no She-Wolf. There's no werewolf at all. Someone thinks that she is a werewolf and isn't.
I think because of my complete disappointment at that title, I've pushed it out of my mind. And whenever someone brings it up, I think of the 50s film She-Beast that has that incredible armored woman with the tentacles.
Right, right, right.
That I've conflated.
No. She-Wolf of London is June Lockhart whining in a bed.
The
good news is it's only like 60 minutes long. And the last one I'll talk about is a movie called No One Lives, which came out earlier this year and is a co-production between, I think, Pathé, a French studio, and WWE Films. And it's directed by the man who made Versus, the Asian, Ninjas versus Zombies movie in the early 2000s, and Midnight Meat Train, which is not a movie I like. It has a really, really neat idea, and I don't even want to say what it is, because if you have any intention of seeing it, you should go into it blind. It has a great premise, and then, like, the stuff doesn't exactly know what to do with it, but very bloody and certainly entertaining for 90 minutes in October.
Editor's note, JB likes Midnight Meat Train a lot.
So that's what we have been watching lately. Let's talk vampire movies.
Yes, and as It was either on the site or you had said it, you had like softly muttered it before you fell asleep, or maybe it was on one of the videos with you and Doug that, I think it might've been on your Netflix review of werewolf movies, that once you dig beyond the obvious few, it's a big sewer.
Yes.
And that's what we discovered, because this afternoon, we'd like to talk about our favorite vampire movies and some of the worst vampire movies ever made.
Yeah, we did this a couple years ago for zombie movies. Yes. Although I don't think we did the worst. I had a much easier time coming up with good zombie movies than I did with good vampire movies.
Could that be? I wanted to say the economy of scale, but that's the wrong phrase. That there are so many goddamn vampire movies.
Sure.
The odds are not in your favor.
I guess.
Are you rising to the top?
And once again, I did this thing, and I said before we started recording that I have to give my list with a lot of caveats, because I did the thing where I wanted to choose five different movies than the ones that JB chose, because I feel like it's more interesting for you guys to get 10 recommendations, but that means that he got the five good ones.
Also, I need to point out,
also-rans.
Patrick chose titles that I didn't pick without knowing what
yes,
I picked.
That's correct.
So this will also be a Karnak-like exercise in how well you know me.
Yeah. All right, do you want to go first?
Yes. Okay. We're going to start at five, and we're going to count up to the greatest ever.
Okay.
And I am just at this moment renumbering my list.
Oh, my goodness. Something just changed?
No, I made a big mistake,
oh,
man.
Dear.
What was I thinking,
oh,
man?
Oh, no.
Oh, man. Oh, God. Oh, man. Oh, God. My fifth favorite vampire film is a film called Shadow of the Vampire.
Okay.
I believe you're familiar with it.
I am.
And it's very clever. It not only has a clever premise, but I think it does something with that premise to make a statement about what it means to create art and some of the obstacles that you have in creating art. It has a cast to die for. John Malkovich plays F.W. Murnau, and Willem Dafoe plays Max Schreck, and Eddie Izzard shows up as the actor who plays Hooter in Nosferatu. The film posits, there's a verb you don't hear very much anymore, that when Murnau made Nosferatu, his now famous illegal film version of Dracula, he hired a real vampire to play the Count. And as he's making the film, the Count is slowly killing his crew and his cast. It's endlessly clever. I don't think it runs out of gas halfway through like a lot of these high-concept things.
Yeah.
Everyone really commits to their part. The film looks beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
The recreations of the original film are great. It's a lot of fun.
I haven't seen it in a long time, but I remember really liking how clever it is, and really liking Willem Dafoe's performance.
Like a lot of films that I wrote about on Unsung, it sometimes makes me scratch my head how some things instantly vault to the pantheon. They show up a lot on cable and a lot at repertory theaters, and they sort of gain this reputation. And then other ones sink like a stone. I mean, it's not a horror film, but Quiz Show seems to have disappeared, except for the fact that I have it on DVD.
Right. You don't have it on DVD. You borrow it from me every year.
Didn't you notice? I finally bought a copy after 5 years of calling up Patrick shamefaced the night before I needed, can I come over and borrow? Because I still believe in physical media. But my fifth favorite vampire film is Shadow of the Vampire.
Okay. Again, every time I introduce one of these, I'm going to have to say, my fifth favorite is probably one that's on JB's list. But here's one that I really like from 1992, Innocent Blood, directed by John Landis. It's not the greatest movie, but I really like the combination of mobsters and vampire movies. And it's very much a horror comedy. He's certainly sort of trying to recreate some of the success he had with American Werewolf in London, but I don't feel like Innocent Blood feels like an imitation of American Werewolf in London.
Not at all.
And there's some really fun performances in that movie.
That's the word I was going to use. It's a lot of fun. Don Rickles is in it. Robert Loggia is in it, chewing the scenery.
Yes.
It suggests,
literally.
Yeah, it suggests that mobsters would really love to be vampires, mm-hmm. that would be their dream. Beautiful use of Philadelphia locations at night.
Yeah.
This French actress whose name I can't pronounce.
Yeah, and
Palliard?
Pario. I don't know. She's La Femme Nikita, and then nothing else, basically.
And she's very beautiful and easy on the eyes. And the male lead,
Anthony LaPaglia,
who I really like in a lot of things. And, you know, he never sort of vaulted to stardom.
And it was literally within the last 10 years that I found out he's actually Australian, because he never plays Australian.
It seems to me he always...
Like, he's a New York guy.
I thought he was overdoing his real accent. Yeah. I thought he was like...
Yeah.
But it turns out he's doing that to hide his...
Australian accent.
Australian accent.
But that movie's a lot of fun.
My fourth favorite vampire film.
Yes.
Even though someone who occasionally comments on the site has argued that it's not a vampire film at all, is Near Dark.
Somebody argues that's not a vampire film?
Yes. They say it's an action film with vampire elements.
I mean, that's splitting hairs. That's a vampire movie. I mean,
no, I completely disagree with this, and I'm not saying the person's name. You know who you are. Because I disagree with it so vehemently. I wrote about this a year ago for Unsung, because it came out and it sort of made a medium-sized splash, and then it disappeared.
Yeah.
And I don't know where it went, because in the same way that Stephen Sommers took The Mummy and sort of crossed it with Indiana Jones Adventure, I think Catherine Bigelow took the vampire film and crossed it with the Western or the road film. And it has a lot to say about sort of existential loneliness. It has a lot to say about what we need from each other. It's really scary. I like it a lot. Some people object to how pyrotechnic it gets at the end.
Really?
Yeah.
I always thought people objected. I don't want to give a spoiler, but there's a plot development near the end of the movie that I know people have a big problem with. I think it's a great movie, and I was Googling around a little bit to try and get some ideas as we were putting these lists together, and I feel like Near Dark appears on most of the best vampire lists, and then every once in a while I would come across one that put it on the worst, and I truly can't understand that at all.
I guess it leaves some people cold, but I think, I don't remember the video company, but this had to be 5 or 10 years ago. It had gone out of print in almost every media. And they put out a special edition. And I felt that helped to sort of remind people that it was this hidden gem.
It came out at a time, too, where vampire movies were very big again for a time in the mid to late 80s. There were 5 or 6 really high-profile vampire movies, and that one didn't have any major stars, really. It
Although,
just had James Cameron's company.
I was going to say another reason to watch it is like watching an Aliens reunion, because it's the same cast.
Right. No, I think that's a really great movie. That definitely would have been on my list had I avoided picking it, because I knew it would be on yours.
Because you know me too well.
My number 4, lots of people would argue, is not a vampire movie, because it's about space vampires, and that would be Tobe Hooper's Life Force.
I knew that was going to make your list, and I entertained putting it on my list. I think we've written or spoke about this, because what did we see it as? We recently saw it.
Yeah, we went to the 70mm screening at the Music Box.
That's what it was, a 70mm film festival.
6 months ago, maybe.
Oh my God, is that film fun?
Yeah.
And oh my God, can you not watch it with a modern audience of hipsters? They were like commenting that there's a scene where people have to run through a lab. And there's a lot of doors.
It does go on for a really long time. It does become kind of funny. That movie's crazy, but again, that movie knows that it's crazy. That movie knows exactly what movie it is, and I'm such a fan of a movie that is willing to just go nuts. And by the end of Life Force, when all of London has been taken over by space vampires, I'm on board, man. I really like that movie.
And we were talking earlier about one's first experience seeing a movie, and I remember so well. What year did that come out?
85.
Okay. Wow. Man, talk about a film like making you feel like you're a little kid again. 85, I would have been 23. And I had never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
I remember sitting through it and my jaw dropped open. It was like, this is the most batshit crazy thing I've ever seen. Well, first of all, you got that first half hour
right.
where this is an awfully European use of nudity. And then, like, halfway through, it's like the director, Toby Hooper, shifts gears like on a 10-ton Mack truck, and then it becomes a Hammer film.
I think he was doing a lot of cocaine at the time. I don't know that to be true, but I think that might have played a part. I first saw the movie, I was way too young. I was maybe 11 or 12, and you can't really appreciate that movie at that age because it just seems weird or boring.
Well, there's two things about that movie you would appreciate at 13. And when I first saw it, I didn't know who Patrick Stewart was. So when we went to the 70mm screening, I was like, oh, that's so great.
A problematic lead performance by Steve Railsback, but otherwise, I am a big, big fan of that movie. Available on Blu-ray from Screen Factory.
A performance that frequently goes off the rails back.
Oh, nice. what's next for you, sir?
My third. And at this point, can we just say that they're all my children?
Yes.
And I love them equally.
Yes.
Because this is like how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. Let the Right One In. Is so good.
Yes.
In so many different ways. And it bothers me that, as far as I can ascertain, the one impediment to everyone enjoying it as much as I do is its pace. That a lot of people cannot stand just to what extent that film takes its time. But as I recently mentioned somewhere, I show it every year in class.
Yeah.
And every time I see it, I notice something different about it. And it's one of the few films, again, if you teach film study, you have this weird experience of seeing the same thing sometimes three times a day, which is not, you know, it's this Groundhog Day-like experience, that Let the Right One In is one of the few movies that I've seen maybe 25 times, where every time I see it, I cannot tell you what happens next.
Oh,
that
right.
There's a couple movies like this. They are unmemorizable, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I do know it's a thing. amazing cinematography, some of the best child performances you'll ever see, wise beyond their years. One of the truly great last 10 minutes in film history, and the film certainly builds up to it. I would argue that this film sticks the landing, to use a metaphor Patrick is fond of, much better than the American remake that adds this element, and they keep previewing it, they keep
The candy thing or something?
Yeah, okay. The candy thing is too clever by half and doesn't really add anything to it.
I like the American remake a lot more than you do, but I recognize that obviously the original is the better movie. And I was going to say when we were talking about Near Dark that my argument for why that's clearly a vampire movie is sort of summarized in the, I think his name's Joshua Leonard, the young character who's this old soul trapped in the body of a 12-year-old and can't ever grow up and is very frustrated by that. That, to me, speaks to a lot of what it means to be a vampire. And then Let the Right One In comes along and sort of makes a whole movie out of that, which is great.
You mean the little kid who plays Homer?
Yes.
Interestingly enough, it's Josh Miller.
Oh, Miller. You're right.
He is the son of the actor who plays Damian Karras in The Exorcist.
Really? Okay.
Jason Miller had two sons.
Got it.
Joshua Miller, mm-hmm. who's Homer in Near Dark, and he's also in River's Edge.
Right.
And his other son is Jason Patrick.
Oh, wow. I did not know those two were related.
Yeah.
Who's in The Lost Boys. So in roughly this, and I think they both came out in 87. So in Near Dark and The Lost Boys, what's his name? Miller has two sons playing vampires. Anyway.
It's something. Ideally, in a perfect world, I would have Let the Right One In, the Swedish version, with Richard Jenkins in it.
Yeah.
I really like Richard Jenkins in that film.
Yeah.
And the shot of the car crash from inside the car. That was something.
That's pretty great. What's my next one? Oh, From Dusk Till Dawn. Listen, it's not one of the best vampire movies ever.
Oh, no, it is. Oh, no, it is.
It's super fun.
No. I will argue that from today until doomsday, that came so close to making my list. And I would argue that in the same way that Hitchcock plays a game with us in Psycho.
Sure.
This isn't a movie about a woman who steals money. Rodriguez is playing the exact same game. This isn't about that at all. I'm going to take you on a little tangent. Oh, no, I would not be ashamed to suggest that From Dusk Till Dawn is one of the best vampire movies ever made.
It's a lot of fun, and it presents the vampire movie almost as a zombie movie, only because they are this...
There's so many of them,
and they're so easily sort of ripped apart and destroyed. Right, that the movie becomes about setting up gore gags in terms of how you kill monsters off, which is very much what zombie movies tend to be, that From Dusk Till Dawn sort of does the same thing. It has a lot of energy. The performances are a lot of fun. It has a cast that you wouldn't typically get in a bloody vampire movie.
But I would argue it's more than fun, because the existence of the Harvey Keitel character brings some pretty heavy thoughts to bear.
Yeah.
In fact, one of my favorite lines, and I often use it, although usually when simply talking to myself, is when he turns to the Gecko brothers and says, "Don't you know you've won? You've won.
Yeah.
And I think very often in life we're in a position where we have won, and we'd be much better off if we recognized that fact and acted from there.
Right.
There, the sermon is over. From Dusk Till Dawn is terrific, and I have never failed to see the last shot, the camera pull out, get a tremendous reaction from the audience. Even an audience at the massacre who's seen it before.
Yeah, it's a good last shot.
And it's got this wonderful monologue by Cheech Marin that's really dirty.
I think my favorite line comes near the end of the movie, and I might have the noun wrong, where George Clooney explains that he won't take Juliette Lewis with him. "I may be a bastard, but I'm not a fucking bastard." And that line makes so much sense if you are sort of on that movie's wavelength. I don't know. I like it a lot. It's fun.
I agree.
All right.
But I think it goes beyond fun.
All right.
And now there's two balls left, and I'm juggling, and I'm juggling, and I'm juggling.
What's the best?
Well, number two.
Right.
Is Nosferatu.
Okay.
The F.W. Murnau film. And to show you just how old Grandpa is, when I was 9, I asked my parents for an 8mm movie projector for Christmas, and they came forth, or Santa was good enough to get it to me. And the projector was very expensive for a child's birthday present, I'm assuming. So, of course, there was no money for films, and there was certainly no money to buy a screen. Luckily, my mother would hang the laundry in the basement, and she washed sheets on a fairly regular basis. So that's what I would use as a screen. And the Arlington Heights Memorial Library in northern Minnesota, they let you check out 8mm films. They had maybe 200 silent 8mm films, and I would check Nosferatu out of the library, and my friends and I would go in the basement, and that movie scared the living shit out of us. Now, I was 9,
right.
But there are images in that film, and you know the images and the scenes I'm talking about.
Sure.
That transcend time. They're still scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this was without a musical score, because, I mean, there's no way my parents could spring for magnetic sound. We're watching it in the basement, and the only thing you could hear is the sound of the projector.
Which might even be scarier. I don't know.
The basement got really dark.
Yeah, right. Yeah, of course, that's on the list. That's sort of the original vampire movie, you know? Everybody else has been doing variations on that, even though...
And I've been putting together a display case for my high school. You will read about it in a few weeks. And I brought in my life-size bust of Nosferatu. Because that's in the display case. But for a couple days, it was on my desk. And one of my favorite things ever was, a couple of years ago, the first time I brought it to school, I was showing Nosferatu in class. And I said, "Hey, I have a life-size bust of Nosferatu. I think I'll bring that to class." And it's sitting on my desk. And a student walks up to it and says, "Does that do anything? Or is it just to look at?" And I thought that said so much about their generation, that it's not... Does it light up?
Right.
Does it play music?
Right.
How can anything be just one thing?
It's just to look at.
But
boring.
I was explaining to my class that it's a miracle that we still have Nosferatu, that Florence Stoker won her lawsuit against the filmmakers, and the judge ordered all the prints destroyed. I've read that one survived, and every time you see Nosferatu, it's the same print. I was explaining in my class that 80% of all movies made before 1930 no longer exist in any form. And my students' reaction to that was strange. It was very hard for them and you know, in the age of I can put it in my laptop and make millions of copies of it because it's digital, it took them a really long time to wrap their head around, no, it's gone.
Right.
It's gone forever.
Right.
We know it existed for various reasons, newspaper articles and things, but it is gone.
Yeah.
So, I knock wood that we still can watch Nosferatu because it's a masterpiece.
My my number two can't really compare with Nosferatu, but again, it's from 2010. It's called Daybreakers. An Australian directing team, the Spierig brothers. Ethan Hawke, Willem Dafoe, Sam Neill plays a villain named Charles Bromley. Have you seen it?
And now I will reveal my shame. I, too, did an internet search looking at best of lists, and I was amazed at how many lists that movie made.
Really?
And it is on my Apple TV because you, young
man,
once gave me the digital copy on your review copy because you weren't going to use it.
Right.
It is sitting on my laptop. How many years ago was that?
Probably three.
It's sitting on my Apple TV. That movie and Spirit of the Beehive, which I DVR'd from TCM, the films on my list I never get to.
Yeah, I guess I won't say much about it, but again, it's a movie that builds and builds and builds. It's this sort of high-concept movie that presents a world in which everyone is a vampire. And there's a small band of human, a human resistance that Ethan Hawke sort of joins with. And it has an amazing ability to top itself. Just when you think it's gotten as crazy and, I'll say, as bloody as it's going to get, no, no, here comes one more set piece that's going to outdo the last one. Again, these are not necessarily classics of cinema, but they do something different with the vampire movie and are very, very entertaining.
I love movies like that. I love movies that do something outrageous in the first 10 minutes. Because somewhere in the back of your movie-watching brain, you're like, you know, at the end, they're going to have to top this.
Right, right.
The only film that springs to mind is Scanners.
Sure.
Which,
sure.
Again, I'm in college, and I go to see that, and no one, oh, you should have seen. A couple people left.
Really?
It.
I mean, that movie had been ruined for me for years because I watched Terror in the Isles so many times growing up, and it's that scene is in there in its entirety. So by the time I saw Scanners, I was just repeating the clip I had already seen. Daybreakers is great. You should watch it this October.
Except everything's taken apart. For the next 36 weeks, I'm pretty much going to be watching movies on my laptop. We're doing some home improvement and everything's taken apart. So, without any further ado, and I don't think this is any surprise, the greatest vampire film ever made is the 1931 Dracula.
Yes.
And I think this is interesting because we talked about this a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, that the miraculous restoration that Universal did on Dracula for the Blu-ray made all these people watch it again and sort of reevaluate what they thought of it. Because for years and years and years, I recognized that Dracula was one of the Universal horror films that first got me interested in horror films. But the older I got, the more I saw it as really creaky and stage-bound, and it was sort of falling off my radar and falling off my favor. And I think you said the same thing, although maybe you didn't fall out of favor with it. In the last 5 years, every time I've watched it, I'm like, no, this is really, really good.
Yeah, no, that's one that I've sort of always gone to bat for because its reputation for a long time was, yes, this is the one that started it all,
but
they got so much better after
this.
But
it's a museum piece.
Right, and it's the one that I've always gone back to maybe more than any of the Universal Monster movies.
In a perfect world, I would have Lugosi and Fry magically photoshopped into the Spanish version for a number of reasons.
Right.
But recently, last week, you can read my 7-word review on the website, Devil Bat came out on Blu-ray.
I watched that, I think, last year during Scary Movie Month.
That almost sounds like an oxymoron, Devil Bat on Blu-ray. They were very proud of the job they did, and I guess they went from a 35mm element, which was the big attraction, but man, was their 35mm print beat up. And I'm watching this thing, and Jan and I are having a good old time, and it's the best. And I was just admiring, you know, say what you want about Lugosi, and this is one thing that the movie Ed Wood gets right, although I don't think he had quite a potty mouth. no matter what he was in. He gave it his all.
Yeah.
He gives a performance in Devil Bat that movie does not deserve.
Yeah.
Considering that half of it is almost the front page. That film spends an incredible amount of time with these two dickish newspaper reporters and their get-rich-quick scheme. And it's Dave O'Brien from Reefer Madness, the king of shallow.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, could we have more of the bat? Because the bat is...
Well, last year during the massacre, remember, I think it was last year, they showed The Black Cat.
Yeah.
And that movie has problems, but man, does Bela Lugosi give a performance, and he's kind of the hero of that movie.
Yeah.
But he's this demented, obsessed hero, and
no,
he's
so great
to
watch.
That's
what I like about that one, because
it inverts the...
they figured out ways of making Karloff so much worse.
Right.
Well, I guess we have to side with Lugosi.
It inverts what you would expect from the casting of those two.
Karloff killed his wife and is keeping her in a tube.
Right.
Because Karloff was in love with her. So
Bela Lugosi skins him alive. You're still on his side.
I can kind of see him getting a little cheesed off about that. God, I love Bela Lugosi.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Dracula's the best.
God, I wish Hollywood had treated him better.
Yeah. It's kind of sad. It's very sad. My number one, again, and I think the only movie on this that would definitely make a list, had I made a list that included your movies as well, this is the only one that for sure would have also appeared, and that's Fright Night from 1985, which I've talked about lots of times on this podcast and just talked to Tom Holland a couple weeks ago, and so I won't go on and on about how much I love Fright Night, but I love Fright Night because it takes a very sort of classical approach to a modern movie, and by modern, I mean 1985, so it has some silly fashion and some synthesizer music and all that stuff, but has so much respect for sort of the rules of vampire movies, has so much respect for the traditions of horror and horror films by making Peter Vincent the host of these old-fashioned horror movies. They get to do lots of references to Hammer and that kind of stuff. I just really love Fright Night, and that's one of my favorite vampire movies.
My favorite part of Fright Night is Roddy McDowall. And oddly enough, my reaction to Fright Night is the same as your reaction to Halloween.
Sure.
I respect it academically
mm-hmm.
and wonder why I'm not on board.
Sure.
Because it's got everything I like.
Right.
Sort of similar to my reaction to Super 8 when we did the podcast.
Uh-huh.
That Super 8 is about me
right.
as a preteen.
Right.
So why am I not on board?
Right.
Why am I curiously detached?
Yeah.
Of course, once you see the remake of Fright Night, you will realize that the
Have
original
you seen
Fright
that?
Night
oh,
is a masterpiece. Oh. Life is too short.
Oh, the remake of Fright Night. That movie got a pass, and I can never figure out why. Everybody said, it's not that bad, it's pretty good.
It's not that bad. There are two reasons I will not see the remake of Fright Night, Colin and Farrell.
he was one of maybe the better things about it. Anyway, so those are our favorites. Watch any of those 10 vampire movies, and you'll have a good time.
So now we're switching gears like a 10-ton Mack truck.
Please
I am once again blessing
again
the room.
With the holy
Do you really
water?
Hate it that much?
It's fine. I just have to clean my glasses every
well,
time.
Well, I'll aim. Here,
you.
I'll aim at your crotch.
Oh, good. My balls are blessed.
Wasn't that the name of your first solo album?
It was, yeah. You should have seen the cover art. it's hard to pick the worst.
Oh, no. I disagree.
I think it is. And here's why. There are so many. And there are a lot that I haven't seen.
True.
And I wanted to go with movies that... I didn't want to pick stuff that went to, like, straight to video. So they made two sequels to The Lost Boys. And they are among the worst movies ever made. But that's kind of a cheat. So I tried to pick more high-profile movies. I know you went another way.
This is the... But I think this is the reason why you said that. And I said, oh, it was the easiest thing on earth.
Yeah.
First of all, my five are so... misbegottenly shitty shit bad.
Yeah.
You watch a lot more of that direct-to-video fringe stuff than I do.
Yeah.
So I think that's where we're drawing the
Maybe.
Line.
Maybe. And I don't think I've even seen the movies on your list.
I know you haven't seen three of them.
Yeah.
I believe you've seen two of them.
I don't love vampire movies enough to seek out every single one
right.
ever made.
Just because
so if I know it's going to be shit, I just will skip it.
For instance, before the podcast began, we realized that neither of us have seen Vampire Dentist.
Right.
Which makes
to a Vampire Dentist, but never seen the movie.
Which makes a lot of worse lists, and The Littlest Vampire, which is a Jonathan Lipnicki vehicle.
Is Vampire Dentist's last name Acula? I'll bet it is.
Is there any trope we're more sick of?
It is.
Alucard. I can't name all the films that have trotted that out. There's an Ed Wood film that it's like, really, Ed? Ed Wood thought he was the first. These are in order, because once we get to number one, it's off the charts bad. My fifth worst vampire films, please don't see any of these. And just to make sure, I watched parts of it yesterday.
Oof.
And not the good parts. Embrace of the Vampire.
Okay.
It's misbegotten. It's like a Cinemax movie on Seconal or Quaaludes. It was clearly made for one reason, yes. And that reason is so unwholesome that there's a television show that's popular, and there's this little girl on the television show, and now the little girl has grown up.
Right.
It's slow. It's embarrassing. I don't think it's erotic.
I've seen it. I remember none of it. I know of its reputation because it's the movie where Alyssa Milano got naked. I remember none of it.
In fact, it really doesn't have much to do. The vampire is just window dressing.
Well, listen, any movie that's called Embrace of the Vampire is way more interested in sort of being sexy than it is in being a horror movie.
Yes, think of Kiss of the Vampire.
Right.
Which was very interested in being sexy.
Right.
No, he said sexist.
My number five is a movie called Dracula 2000, which came out in the year 2000.
Oh, okay.
And it was an attempt to sort of relaunch Dracula. It reimagines Dracula as Judas, basically. When Judas betrayed Christ, a curse was put on him that made him Dracula. And he's played by Gerard Butler. If you watch that movie now, there's a bunch of people that you know and recognize.
Who plays Jesus?
I don't remember because it's only in flashbacks and I haven't seen it in 13 years, but I saw it in the theater in 2000 and it came on sort of that wave of Miramax realizing, oh, there's money to be made with horror films because they had a big hit with Scream. And so they just kept putting out these movies with sort of recognizable TV stars in film roles. Nathan Fillion shows up and Omar Epps and, Colleen Fitzpatrick, who was in the original John Waters Hairspray and then had a singing career as an artist called Vitamin C plays a part. And it's boring and it's garbage. And yet there are four that I can think of that are worse.
Good Lord. Scouring the internet for worse lists, I discovered that some internet scribes decided to take the afternoon off. And when they list the worst vampire films, it's Twilight,
yes.
The second Twilight,
yes.
The third Twilight, and then they split them Harry Potter-like into, so there's your five.
I thought that was cheap. I didn't put any Twilight movies on that list. I don't consider them vampire movies.
I had resisted Twilight,
yes.
Until a certain P. Bromley shared with me an article by film crit Hulk Smash of Badass Digest, and I am such a fan of that piece.
Yes.
That I instantly tried to whip up a classroom assignment around it. So I teach AP English, and the kids have got to read like five nonfiction pieces on the same subject and write an essay about it. So I found other pieces on the internet that commented on the Twilight phenomenon, used the Hulk piece as the cornerstone, but I have one from a psychologist talking about the psychology of the Twilight phenomenon. I have another one from a very Christian website talking about why Twilight is bad if you're interested in being religious. And then I went to a Twilight fan site, and I found this screed from this girl who really likes Twilight. And so my students have to read these pieces, and the Hulk piece is very lengthy. And they have to write an essay. And because I was doing this as a class assignment, I thought, I don't want to be a hypocrite or ignorant. So I watched Twilight, which is 2 hours of my life. I won't get back.
Yeah.
You and Erica have done a podcast on it.
Yes.
It's one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
It's really boring. Really boring.
And again, Hulk gets to the bottom of this. It's the fever dream of this repressed Mormon woman. And once you understand that, I mean, it makes perfect sense.
Right.
But it is not compelling cinema. It's for her therapist to work her through.
And again, I've only seen, I think, the first two, and I know some of the broad strokes of the later movies. But from what I understand, Twilight, the first movie, has sort of the clearest plot that,
yes,
that once it's revealed that he's a vampire. I mean, the movie is at least about something. She falls in love with this guy. She finds out he's a vampire. That's almost a movie.
And I might have the filmmakers wrong, but who directed the first one?
Catherine Hardwicke.
Okay. And she tried to make it something.
Right.
That the studio did not like.
Right.
And they handed it over to someone else.
Right. Chris Weitz made the second one, who made the American Pie movies.
Right.
And then it was David Slade who did the third one, who did Hard Candy and 30 Days of Night, which I think you're a fan of.
I'm a big fan of 30 Days of Night.
I'm not. That might have ended up on my least favorites, but it didn't. And then Bill Condon.
Right.
Fucking Bill Condon made the last two.
Yeah. Talk about slumming. But, yeah. I mean, and if you, and maybe because I stopped after the first one,
yeah,
you could get a lot worse. The one where they're in Italy was on cable one day.
Yes.
And
I feel like that's the rest of them, but maybe I'm wrong.
You know, I was channel surfing. It came up and I watched it for maybe 5 minutes, and it was a Steadicam following that thin, pale girl.
Sure.
The lead.
Oh, yeah. Kristen Stewart.
Following her through the streets of Italy.
Yeah.
In what seemed to be real time. Yeah. And she seemed to be walking to Switzerland.
Again, I don't understand the whole chronology, but I feel like there's a first movie and then a last movie, and then the other ones are just sort of placeholders. That nothing really happens between the first and last movie.
And the essay, the original essay by Film Crit Hulk, was the source of one of my favorite quotes of all time. This is a book written without purpose or intent.
Yeah. My next movie is a movie that is rightfully forgotten. It's called The Forsaken. It came out in 2001, played in theaters. I saw it. It's a vampire movie that Jonathan Scheck, I think, is either the lead or a vampire. I literally don't remember. It has a bunch of, like, WB actors from the time. It's garbage.
This is beginning to sound familiar. He's in That Thing You Do.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I think he's the vampire. I can't remember. You know,
does he play James Mattingly III in The Forsaken?
Most of the 90s and sort of the early 2000s are a bad time for horror movies.
Yes.
And while there's a few bright spots, like Scream comes along and everybody says, oh, horror movies are a thing again, but most of them are bad. And the only horror movies that sort of got made with any frequency were vampire movies, because there's always a market for vampire movies.
People say that horror movies go in and out of style, and that's true, but vampire movies never go out of style. There's always vampire movies.
Yeah, and now there's vampire TV shows, and because there have been a few successful vampire movies, even in the 90s, Interview with a Vampire, which I don't really like, and Bram Stoker's Dracula, which was the other movie. I had four of your five. I didn't know Shadow of the Vampire would be on there. I thought it was going to be Bram Stoker's Dracula.
I'm consistently on the fence about Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Okay.
There's a lot to like.
Yes.
But there are some things not to like.
Yes. But because those movies are successful, you know, vampire movies keep getting made, and so The Forsaken can come out on a weekend, and I'll go see it, and then forget about it for the rest of my life, until we have to name the worst vampire movies, and then it comes back.
It comes back to haunt us, literally. My third worst vampire film is a tie, but only because some may quibble at one of the two choices.
Okay.
The first choice for third worst vampire film is a film, I'm not making this up, called Bela Lugosi Meets a Brooklyn Gorilla. That is the title of the
I'm
film.
I'm aware of the film, but have never seen it.
And actually, of the bad ones, I would say that you should see this just to let your jaw drop. In the 50s, there was a comedy team called Mitchell and Petrillo. They've largely been forgotten.
Yeah.
Sammy Petrillo's claim to fame is that he looked and acted just like Jerry Lewis.
Okay.
If you watch it, you know what's going on. It's not subtle.
Right.
And he found a partner named, I forget the guy's first name, but his name is Mitchell, who looks exactly like Dean Martin. So we tend to forget how popular Martin and Lewis were in the 50s. So here's the Beatlemania of Martin and Lewis. Bela Lugosi meets a Brooklyn gorilla is their first vehicle. Jerry Lewis sees it. He sues the film company and wins, ending Sammy Petrillo's movie career. And it's yet another example of this absolute shit that Bela Lugosi had to make once he was out of favor. Yeah. It is embarrassing. And if you say, well, it's Bela Lugosi, but I don't remember there being any vampires in that, well, then we'll just have to settle for Van Helsing.
Yes.
Which is my third worst vampire film ever made.
I went back and forth because Van Helsing, to me, it has vampires in it, but I wasn't ready to call it a vampire movie.
Well, because Van Helsing's the protagonist,
sure,
I thought it qualified.
I won't argue with it being on your list, but that's the only reason it's not on mine, because it is the worst. It's so depressingly bad.
And this might give you some idea of how bad my one and two is. Van Helsing is clearly third, once you hear the first two. I've gone on and on about this. It's so bad. As good as Summer's Mummy is, that's how misconceived this is. It just goes wrong on every conceivable level. Once the monsters become CGI and they're knocking themselves against walls, there's no stakes, there's nothing.
Again, that's 50th on that movie's list of problems, I think.
And I would argue that another reason why it's third and not first is that it did spark another reissue of the original films. And this, too, I find funny. They all came out to celebrate Van Helsing with Steven Sommers-centric extras.
Right.
And then they put the Blu-rays out with every extra they've ever done except for the Summer stuff.
And the only reason I hang on to those legacy ones, which are great, is because they have so many of the bonus movies that didn't come out on the Blu-ray.
So I'm
able to see She-Wolf of London in 2013.
So Bela Lugosi meets a Brooklyn girl on one hand, Van Helsing on the other hand. We have cow shit versus pig shit.
To remind us of how bad horror movies were, especially in the mid-90s, here's the movie that really, to me, represents everything that's bad about horror in the 90s. 1995's Vampire in Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah.
Directed by Wes Craven, so it should be good in theory.
And every time I see that, I somehow think that's Landis after his movies got bad.
Does the same thing where it puts Eddie Murphy in a bunch of different makeups and he plays a bunch of different characters. Eddie Murphy is an interesting guy because he has all these genre passions. He wants to be in a Star Trek movie, so he's almost in Star Trek 4. He wants to play a vampire, so they make Vampire in Brooklyn this vehicle for him.
He wants to date a transvestite, but he doesn't want to come out as gay.
And it's just depressingly terrible. And Angela Bassett is really trying to give a real performance in the movie. It's not funny. It's not scary. I can't tell if it's trying to do either one. The movie can't really make up its mind. Really, truly a terrible movie.
On a side note, I noticed, and it made me think that some of these people making these lists had not actually seen all the films. I was surprised how many worst lists Blackula made.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with Blackula.
I haven't seen Blackula, but there's a very good chance that people haven't seen.
Right, that it's just,
oh, it's a punchline. Ha ha, Blackula. Put it on the list.
Because if you're truly looking for bad blaxploitation horror, you should look no further than Blackenstein.
Which was on Netflix Instant for a while, and I don't think is, but I didn't get a chance to see it.
Which makes Blackula look like a masterpiece.
Makes Blackula look like Dracula. What is next for you? Your number two.
Okay, this film is just, I remember watching this on TV when I was but a lad, because I had not yet discovered Alan Sherman, and Alan Sherman does the theme song, but only under protest. Here's the deal. There was an actor in England named Arthur Lucan, and Arthur Lucan was a female impersonator, because I guess the English, that's as funny as it gets. Look at Monty Python. It's a tradition that won't be killed. Arthur Lucan made a series of films in England featuring this character of his called Old Mother Riley. And they were successful. And they were impossible to import because Americans failed to recognize the comic genius that was Arthur Lucan. So he makes a film, as all these comedians do in the wake of Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. He makes a film called Vampire Over London. and it's with Old Mother Riley. It's an Old Mother Riley film. And it's very successful in England. They can't import it here. And I'm not sure if it was released in England under two titles or if this was their first attempt to shove it down Americans' throats, because Vampire Over London was also exhibited, I've seen the poster, as Old Mother Riley Meets the Vampire. You get the name of this beloved character.
Right.
But Americans aren't buying Old Mother Riley and Arthur Lucan. In a last-ditch attempt, this distributor, this godforsaken distributor, notices either that Alan Sherman had recorded a song, or Alan Sherman's hot. That first record of his with Hello Mother, Hello Father sold millions of copies.
Right.
So I haven't been able to figure out if he just said, I'll use this song that exists, or if he went to Sherman and commissioned this song. Because the first album was called My Son the Folk Singer, millions of copies, and then his follow-up was called My Son the Nut. So he records a song, My Son the Vampire.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes the theme song, and that becomes the title of the film in the United States in this just shamefacedly naked attempt
right.
to get someone
right.
on these shores to see an Old Mother Riley film. And the song sounds like he wrote it in about 3 minutes,
I
which is the
did.
Length of the song.
Yeah.
Features lyrics like, my son the vampire, he's a total loss. You better start running when he takes out his dental floss.
I saw where the rhyme was going, but didn't know how we were going
to
get there.
And then to boost the song's questionable charms, at various points in the song, doing one of the worst Bela Lugosi impressions I've ever heard, Sherman just yells, blood! Like, we're not going to get it.
That's
so it starts with all these... I make a Halloween CD every year for my friends. That's going to be on this year's. I finally found a way to legally download it. So it starts with all these weird noises, and then it becomes a tune, which is almost a tune, but it's not really a tune.
Right.
And then, out of nowhere, blood! That's the first thing you hear.
I love it.
And according to some things I looked at on the internet, that's the thing people remember.
Just blood?
Because they were kids,
right.
And kids thought that was funny.
Right.
The film is called My Son the Vampire, or maybe you've heard it called Old Mother Riley Meets the Vampire. By the way, there's a reason those Old Mother Riley films did not take off in the United States.
They're not hilarious, is what you're saying?
They're more curious that you sit there and you're wondering what were the factors that led an entire nation to embrace this horrible thing.
Sometimes we talk about bad movies and I know I want to stay the hell away. And then sometimes we talk about bad movies and there's enough where I think, maybe I want to see My Son the Vampire. But I know I shouldn't, because that's the reason we're saying these are the worst. My number two, again, a more recent film, not as obscure, is a movie called Blood Rain. R-A-Y-N-E, based on, I believe, a video game directed by... the famous Uwe Boll, again, gets a cast of recognizable actors. Kristanna Loken plays the title character. Meatloaf shows up. I believe Michael Madsen is in it. In just total, total garbage. It seems like something that was made for the Sci-Fi Channel. It wasn't. It got a theatrical release. Everyone involved is visibly embarrassed.
Does Meatloaf show up in Blood Rain with really big breasts?
I believe you're confusing it with a different movie, the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Blood Rain is garbage. Too many of you listening will have seen it, and that's depressing.
And again, I'm patting myself on the back. I've never seen it. And I think the reason I haven't seen it is the Y in the title.
Yeah.
That's my,
the giveaway.
Yeah, the minute you change the spelling of a word that most of us use on a monthly basis. What's the weather like?
Blood rain.
And finally, and I think I can say this without fear of disagreement or reprisals, I actually saw this in a theater. According to its release date, I would have been 12. I don't know why they let me go see this. Maybe I told them I was seeing something else, because clearly it was rated R. I think it was rated R. And I saw it at the Des Plaines Theater when I was a child. And it's a film called Old Dracula.
Okay.
Have you ever seen it?
No.
Ooh, just like My Son the Vampire, this thing has a storied history. We're in the early 70s. This is that really ugly time where David Niven just takes anything.
Yeah.
Like, you see the original version of Casino Royale and wonder why your overhead is too high. You have to do a certain number of movies. David Niven plays Dracula, and he's hit hard times, and he's reduced to giving tours of the castle. Okay, maybe you can do something with that, but here's the rub. The film was originally made under the title Vampyra. That's the title it shot under. And then Young Frankenstein came out and was a mammoth hit. So young, old Dracula.
It's funny already.
Only it's not. And to show you the depths of this film's lack of comic invention, the film also stars Teresa Graves, who was experiencing a little blip in her 15 minutes of fame because in the early 70s, ABC put a show on the air called Get Christy Love.
Oh, right.
And Get Christy Love was an attempt to take Pam Grier movies and put them on TV every week without Pam Grier, with a black woman that America would accept, who's not as foxy and not as, you know. And Teresa Graves was this, and Teresa Graves is riding this very small wave of popularity, and they want to put Teresa Graves in the film. I'm going to screw this up, but I'm going to try to do the best I can. Dracula revives his long-dead wife. That's the plot.
Okay.
And because his vampire bride had been sealed in the coffin and really dead and buried for so long, when they revive her, she's black. So this is like one step away from Ossie Davis and Bubba Hotep saying, John F. Kennedy, the CIA dyed me black.
Right.
How about this? Don't mention it.
Yeah.
Here's my vampire bride. I'm bringing her back to life. Ladies and gentlemen, the beautiful Teresa Graves.
Right.
The fact that the screenwriter had to do that end run and clearly thinks it's funny because she's black. See, it turned her black.
Right.
I was 12 years old, and it wasn't a case of I'm seeing something I shouldn't be seeing because I don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
At 12 years old, I'm sitting there, well, this is shit. And I'm 12. I'm 12 years old, and it's still one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Yikes. Wow, I've never even heard of Old Dracula. My number one is maybe unfair, and here's why. You just talked about a movie you've lived with since you were 12. Every other movie you've seen, you've been able to measure up against Old Dracula, and you're able to still say, nope, that one's the worst.
How does this, in fact, every time, Last Night at Gravity, how does this measure up? It's perverse. It's perverse that I would use that as the yardstick.
My number one I've lived with for 48 hours, so that's probably not fair.
I was so wishing this would make the list.
Yes. By the time this podcast comes out, I hopefully will have found time to write a review of this movie, so I won't spend too much time. You can just go to the review. It's a movie I just saw. It's currently playing in limited release and on demand. It's called Dario Argento's Dracula 3D is the full title.
It's a big get of this year's Chicago Film Festival. Maybe because he's going to be here in person or something.
I think it's because he's going to be here in person.
Okay, because you're saving me an evening of my life.
I mean, I would almost suggest going just to look around and see what the reaction is to Dario Argento's Dracula. Or even better, to try and listen to the Q&A afterwards, where the person asking the questions has to pretend like what he made was art.
I was just going to say, because we've both been there.
Yes.
Because he's there, there's an unspoken agreement.
Right. We have to pretend like this works in some way. I'm having a hard time writing the review because I'm having a hard time finding the words that adequately express how terrible of a movie it is.
Is it worse than Mother of Tears?
Yes.
That's saying something.
It's even worse than Giallo, which came after Mother of Tears. Mother of Tears is hateful garbage. But at least, it's really bloody. So there's one thing we can say. And the violence is mean-spirited and unpleasant. But at least it's that.
with amateurish special effects that somehow make it more hateful.
And yet, those special effects are done practically.
Yeah.
Not so with Dracula, Dario Argento's Dracula, which is done all CG, and you're almost positive that either the CG, that someone just invented CG, and this is the first time we're seeing it, or it's done by a 10-year-old with After Effects on his MacBook.
You're seeing CG effects by the lowest bidder company.
100%. I saw the movie in 2D, not 3D. Perhaps it would have been a transformative experience in 3D. I can think of two moments in the film that call attention to, this is 3D. Do yourself a favor. I'm pretty sure a trailer exists for Dracula 3D. Just watch the trailer. Pay attention to the flat, almost corporate video quality to the cinematography, the terrible, terrible acting. This is a movie that killed my boner for Asia Argento. This movie...
She in it?
Yes.
Oh.
But done in a way that is worth seeing. It's just so bad. Watch the trailer.
Is that the way she says her name?
Yeah. And expand it to 90 minutes, and you'll have some idea of what it's like to sit through this, one of the worst movies ever made.
I was going to try and get tickets to see it at the Chicago Film Festival, just because Argento's going to be there, and you saved me an evening and a long drive and however much money, and now I know how to pronounce her name. Why did I think it was Asia?
Because that's how it's spelled. Yeah, I mean, if going to see Dario Argento in person is a get for you, I say do it.
No,
because I still can't understand the appeal, and Dracula 3D does him no favors.
You know what I'm talking about. Once a year now,
yeah,
I screen Fear in the Dark.
Yes.
And he's interviewed.
Yes.
And that's the point where everyone in class has to shift because there's subtitles suddenly at the bottom and they can't see them. I was very young when I was introduced to Edgar Allan Poe. Now, he's speaking Italian. I'm translating the subtitles in his accent. And it made a physical reaction. It gave me a fever.
Yes. He has the fever. Garbage movie.
You've saved me an evening of my life. Very quickly, I did want to point out that there were some movies that didn't make the list, but they're certainly worth your time, especially for Scary Movie Month. Patrick is not a fan of this film, and yet I am. I actually have the action figures. I'm looking at them now. 30 Days of Night, I think, is worth your time. Also, The Fearless Vampire Killers by Roman Polanski is a lot of fun. Martin, which is screening at this year's Massacre.
Yes.
The Addiction.
I've never seen it.
Amazing. Right. Yeah. And it's got one of our favorite actresses in it.
Lily Taylor.
And very slow and tiny and focused, and it's very much the sickness metaphor, and it's terrific. And Lost Boys comes close.
Yeah.
It's got so many great ideas.
Yeah.
It's got one of the best last lines in vampire movie history.
Yes.
I've said it before, I've said it again. You get rid of the Coreys, and you've got something.
Yeah.
Doug
and I did a whole podcast on The Lost Boys, and I will cop to having affection for it because I saw it so many times as a kid. I know it's a mess, but
I'd still entertain myself. I would argue, and maybe you would want to argue back, it was really the first horror film that said, you know, teenagers would love to be vampires.
Yes.
Because you stay young forever.
Yes.
You have to stay out all night. You sleep all day. It's a teenage dream.
Right.
And that I really like. And I like Ed Herman, and I like Barnard Hughes, and I like Jason Patrick.
Diane Wiest.
But the minute they have this ridiculous preteen subplot, you're a vampire. I'm telling mom.
Yeah, no, that's obnoxious. Although I will say, Corey Feldman, I still like his performance in that movie. I like the idea of these two guys who run the comic book shop, but who take vampires really seriously and want to kill them, even though we suspect they've never actually done it.
Well, I think Feldman's giving a performance as opposed to what the other Corey's doing.
Yes.
And they are the Frog Brothers.
Correct.
And
I believe it's Edgar and Alan, right? Frog?
Yes.
See what they did there.
And also Horror of Dracula, which I like, but a lot of people quibble that it just doesn't have enough Dracula in it.
It doesn't.
But what if they figure out the legal entanglements and we finally get a Region 1 version with that extra disintegration footage that we've been teased with and that I guess we're not allowed to see, which is why they put Dracula Prince of Darkness out this year on Blu-ray.
Right. And I'll mention Countess Dracula and the Vampire Lovers, only because both feature Ingrid Pitt, and she's great.
I like Ingrid Pitt.
Well, who doesn't?
In fact, years and years ago, there was a horror film thing at the, it's the Polish Cultural Society now, but it used to be the Gateway Theater.
Okay.
And that's where the Silent Film Society started, and they've bounced around all these theaters.
Right.
Someone did a horror weekend.
Right.
That I think they might have got out of it or something, but the special guest was Ingrid Pitt.
Cool.
She was there in person right before she passed away.
Oh, bummer. Anyway, I like both of those movies. Thanks for listening, everybody. Keep doing the Scary Movie Challenge at ifthismovie.net. 7-word reviews. We're trying to get over 1,500, which we decided earlier in this podcast. Next week will be our Massacre podcast, yes?
With a twist.
With a twist.
To die. To really be dead. That would be something.
Blood!
Blood! Mm-hmm.